Welcome, everybody, to another edition of Three Up, Three Down, your weekly baseball goodness podcast. I am joined once again by my roundtable of baseball associates. This week, we're actually going to give out the Twitter handles. I know we just tell you follow at 3U3D. I'm going to give you our individual Twitter handles this week. We're going to start it off with KP, Kurt Peter, who is at Falcon KP. Say hi, KP.
Just like it sounds, Falcon KP. What's up, everybody?
All right. Next up is Brian Boynton. He is at Ranger Fan Brian. Brian with an I. He spells it the wrong way. I'm Brian with a Y, the correct way.
Maybe still start anything. You can't finish now.
Oh, I will end you.
Bring it on, man.
Your team's being no hit right now. You have no ground to stand on.
Yeah.
Next up is Angelo Felicia. He is at Godfather. Angelo, explain the underscores, because I always forget which place to put the underscores.
The underscores are where the A and the E and father would be, because that's just how I have it spelled, that's all.
Naturally, I'm sure somebody already had at Godfather with all the letters by the time you got to it. And last and least, as we established a few weeks ago on the podcast, is Jeremy Dorn. He is at Jamblin Man. Jeremy, what is Jamblin Man?
I don't know. For a long time, it was a nickname was Jam, and I like that song Ramblin' Man, so I combined, made it beautiful.
Ooh.
Sounds great. That is at Jamblin' Man, JAMBLINMAN, on Twitter. And I am Brian Mapes. My Twitter is at I am Mapes. Simple, cut a few characters out with the new name, more room for more activities. We're going to start off this week's baseball news with Johan Santana. Don't mess with the Nohan, as he pitches the first no-hitter in New York Mets history. It took 8,020 games into their 51st season for the Mets to get their first no-hitter, leaving just the San Diego Padres as the only team without a no-hitter. This was such a momentous occasion. You can just see the fans. I saw more fans on Saturday wearing Mets stuff, Mets clothing, hats, jerseys, and everything in Connecticut where I live than I had the entire season already. This is a big deal for Mets fans. They've been waiting a long time for this. Only 8,017 more games until they throw another no-hitter. But there was some controversy. A ball seemed to land in the sixth inning. Carlos Beltran down the third baseline, hit the chalk, ruled a foul ball, but it clearly was foul. No instant replay was called into effect. Probably would have ended up a double, but they're still trying to figure out the way things could go on those fair foul calls. What do you guys think about instant replay being implemented more than it already is on fair foul calls? We'll start it off with you, KP.
I've always been a big fan of instant replay. Not everything and not stupid challenges. And I don't want it to be like football. But I'd sit up in the booth looking at a TV watching baseball, like each game as like the fifth umpire up in the booth, you know. And if something is close or it has to be disputed, he's up there while the game's going on. They play it out as however the field was called, and if they need to call him up to the booth, I mean, he's got it right there. They rewind for 10 seconds. I mean, it doesn't have to be like a extremely elaborate thing, and then they just keep playing. So, I mean, for that hit, it would have been probably a double as it was right down the line. But, I mean, I think and a lot of people make the counter argument where they say, like, well, they lose the integrity of the game. I mean, it's always been umpires, and it's just kind of how it is. But I don't think it would be too much of an issue to put one guy up there. I mean, just watching the game and making sure everything is called correctly.
Brian, over to you. Your thoughts on expanded instant replay for fair foul calls.
I'm so much against instant replay in all sports, for one thing, especially in baseball, though, because every second of a baseball game is a judgment call. So I understand what KP's saying. Yeah, I have a fifth umpire, but where do you stop? Once you start, you're going to have people arguing, oh, well, we should do close plays at first base. We should have out or safe calls on a steal at second. It's once you start, it's on a slippery slope. How do you stop it? So I would get rid of it altogether on home run calls, everything.
Jeremy, over to you. Your thoughts on instant replay.
I'm going to almost completely agree with KP. And Brian, you make a good point about everything being a judgment call, but for things like fair and foul balls, that's, you know, that's a boundary. It's drawn the same way in every stadium on every field, whereas the strike zone, which I do not think should ever be subject to instant replay, is definitely a judgment call because everyone has a different zone. That's part of pitching and hitting, is you have to adjust to the umpire's zone. But, I mean, I'm, for the most part, I've been against instant replay, but when it starts to affect things like historic games like Santana and, of course, Jason Donald being called safe, and Armando Galarraga's perfect game, almost perfect game, a couple of years ago, you know, that's where I start to say, all right, you know, maybe we can do something like KP said, have a fifth umpire up there. And, you know, obviously it is a bang-bang call that the ump has to make, but I think if the instant replay was instituted like that in KP's model, then, you know, the umpire errs on the side of fair ball if it's close every time, and then you can always go back after the runner's gotten to second, plays over, and said, nope, it was a foul ball, sorry. Something along those lines.
Jeremy, thanks for taking away my segue over to Angelo. We saw a no-hitter given to Johan Santana because of instant replay. Angelo, you've been on the side where instant replay not being implemented cost one of your players on your team a perfect game. Where do you stand on what they should do with instant replay?
Well, I mean, you saw my fan cave video. I was at that game with Galarraga. But I'm okay with it from that standpoint. I like the human error in the game with the umpires not being able to make every call correctly. I understand, like, it's unfortunate, but that's just the way it is. But I like instant replay for the concrete calls. Like, if the ball's over the fence and the ump couldn't see it, you know, because it bounced back so quickly, things like that. You know, I think the right call's got to be made. The fair or foul call, I like the human error, the human element of an umpire making that call. It's a judgment call still. I know that the lines are painted there, but you know what? If he didn't see it as such, then foul ball, I guess.
Well, what about Todd Helton, his play at first?
Well, it's the ump's call, man. We've been dealing with this game's been played for so long. You know, why change it now? I know we have the technology too, but I mean, come on, that's like the first time in history that Todd Helton play was called so bad, you know?
That is definitely true. That was a poor call by Tim Welke, but Tim Welke, one of the best umpires for a long time. I'm sure he will get over it. Going to go over to a couple of injuries. Roy Halladay officially out 6 to 8 weeks. We alluded to it on last week's podcast. They weren't sure the time frame with his shoulder soreness. He won't throw for a few weeks. He is out at least 6 to 8. There are rumors that we might not even see him until September. Matt Kemp, Dodgers superstar, back to the DL, played only a couple games coming back from a hamstring injury. Might have been a little too soon trying to leg it out from first to home on a double. Jeremy, are you out of the fetal position? I'm glad you were able to join us. How are you holding up with Matt Kemp going back on the DL?
I'm only out of the fetal position out of necessity because I have to shower and sleep and eat and do normal human things, but otherwise I'd still be curled up in a ball crying like a small child.
All right, I'm going to open up to everybody. What do you guys think is the bigger injury? We still don't know how long Matt Kemp's going to be out, but a re-injury of that hamstring, he might not even be 100% when he does come back. What do you think is the bigger injury blow to the team? Halladay or Matt Kemp? We'll start it off with Angelo.
Okay, I think that the Halladay injury is huge, but I think that the Dodgers have to have Kemp to win that division. So I think Kemp's the bigger injury. Plus, I think there's actually more of a concrete timetable for Halladay to come back. I just don't think that the Kemp thing is something that you can rush. I've tweaked hamstrings before, too. It's not easy to come back from. They can linger for a whole year. So, I think that's on more of like a undetermined timetable for when he's going to come back.
Moving on to Brian, what do you think is the bigger injury, Halliday or Matt Kemp?
Well, Matt Kemp, for obvious reasons. For one thing, the Phillies couldn't win with Halliday pitching. They're certainly not winning without him.
Oh.
So either way, it didn't matter for him because he's been not good this year. And, yeah, like KP was saying, in reference to the Dodgers, the people they have to fill in for Kemp are not nearly as good as Kemp is. So that injury is going to hurt him more. Plus, this could be one of those things that lingers all season. God, hamstrings are very tricky to decide when you're – they decide on their own when you're coming back. You can't tell them when you're coming back, so.
All right, Brian, I'm going to stick with you now. Another pitcher heading to the DL we talked about last week. Luckily, probably not the 6 to 8 weeks. Jared Weaver with a strained back. How does this affect the Angels that seem to be clicking on all cylinders right now?
Well, the Angels, it's going to hurt them a lot. Not a lot, but it's going to hurt them because Weaver is a dominant ace in the league. He's an ace on all but maybe two teams in this league other than the Tigers, Phillies maybe. He would be the number one pitcher on every team in the league. Now, as a Ranger fan, it doesn't affect me anyways because our team is – the Rangers suck right now. So it's not going to matter one way or the other.
All right, going to keep going, Brian, if you got
– Oh, I was just going to say the Angels are going to be just fine without him. They got three solid pitchers behind him, so they're going to be just fine.
That is definitely true. Santana, C.J. Wilson, and Dan Herring can definitely hold down – the fort in the meantime for the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim. Going to go back over to Jeremy. A couple news bits not from your Dodgers. The Colorado Rockies, Troy Tulowitzki, superstar shortstop to the DL with a groin. He doesn't look to miss more than the normal time for the DL, the 15-day stint. Is this a big blow? The Rockies have been reeling all season. How much does this affect that offense? Can Cargo carry it enough?
Well, they've been reeling all season until recently, and I don't just say that because they just beat the Dodgers 2 out of 3. I mean, even before that, they were rolling for a while. And, you know, I'm terrified to think how good the Rockies would be if Cargo and Tulo both played a full season, because it seems like, especially Tulo, one of them's always going down injured for a certain amount of time. But, you know what, I think they're going to be fine for now. The offense as a whole is actually, I think, better than people think, even without the star power. Dexter Fowler has been on fire since he got moved to leadoff. Pitching's always a question, but if they keep scoring 10 runs a game, I think they're going to be better than 500 with Tulo gone. Then when he comes back, they make one of those patented Rocky late-season runs that pisses everyone else in the NL West off.
Remember that run all the way to the World Series back in 07 where the Rockies absolutely went on fire. Maybe they have another run like that in them. They will not be doing that run, however, with 49-year-old Jamie Moyer, who was released, designated for assignment this week by the Rockies. I'm going to open this up to everybody. Started off of you, Jeremy, the NL West guy. Is this the end of the line for Jamie Moyer, or do we see him again this season?
Gosh, I hope we do. I like Moyer a lot, but I just have a feeling it's done, man. I mean, this was a long shot to begin with, you know, getting that invite and being a 49-year-old starter, 49-year-old ace, getting that win, that record-setting win, and then just struggling. I mean, I don't think anyone's fooled by him anymore. And, you know, he used to get by in his younger days, and by younger I mean mid-40s, with, you know, every 4 or 5 starts he'd throw a good, have a good outing, or at least an above-average outing, and now it just seems like every time he's getting crushed. So I got to think this might be the end.
All right, Brian, over to you. Do we see Jamie Moyer in another major league uniform this season?
Well, I sure hope so, but he was just kind of a feel-good story as it was outside of those few solid starts. I just don't see any team taking a flyer on him. I don't see any team that needs a starter that bad that would just be willing to take a flyer on him. Maybe he catches fire or not, so I would love to see him, but I don't see it happening.
Kurt, over to you. Do we see Jamie Moyer one more time?
Yeah, I mean, aside from the feel-good story, and I'd love to see him get a win in his 50s, but I don't think it's happening.
And Angelo, over to you. Do you see Jamie Moyer again this season?
I don't think so. I don't really, personally, I don't really want to. I just think he just kind of looked out of place a little bit. But, Brian, I'll tell you that, I mean, honestly, the Tigers could use him. Our pitching staff right now is, starting pitching staff is hurting. So,
well, the Rangers could use him too. I just didn't want to be the one to say it.
Brian, you already got Royal as well. You're satisfied. And this, for the second time, I've been taken away an Angelo segue, because I was going to say, would you take Jamie Moyer on the Tigers to replace Doug Fister, who is back to the DL of a strained side? Do we see Doug Fister? It took him over a month before we saw him come back from the oblique injury the first time. Do we see him before the All-Star break, Angelo?
Hopeful me says yes, but I don't know. Reality is I don't think so. And it's just, it's not good for us, but what are you going to do?
Yeah, I could see Jamie Moyer in a Tigers uniform. He could use Comerica Park to his advantage, I think. He'd be decent.
Yeah, he wouldn't be too bad, I don't think. Let's hope.
He could probably shut down the Twins. Just only have them start against
Mapes.
Twins.
Mapes, I think I could shut down the Twins.
Wow. Well, the Twins have been better recently. It's still the worst record in the majors, but they're getting better. They were able to take a couple series. Gonna go over to Kurt now. Alan Craig activated from the disabled list for the Cardinals. Skip Schumacher to the DL for the Cardinals. Is this a overall plus for them? Is Alan Craig more important than Skip Schumacher at this juncture?
I think so. I mean, Alan Craig's batting .355 this year. He's got 9 runs, 6 home runs, 22 RBIs. I mean, he's kind of the power bat that the Cardinals lineup, I mean, seems to be stacked from 1 to 9, and the ones that can kind of just hit a home run or hit a double whenever they need to. I mean, his last 10 games, he's driven in 13 RBIs. He got 14 hits. I mean, that's no slouch. So Skip Schumacher has kind of been struggling this year. He's still batting .321. He's driven in 12 RBIs. I mean, he just doesn't, to me, have that, like, sneaky power, like the guy who can just kind of come through with a big hit when he needs to.
Mike Matheny, I beg you, start playing Alan Craig at second base so we can have second base eligibility next season in fantasy leagues. It's all I really need. Another injury, Nick Markakis to the DL with a fractured hammock bone. We saw this happen to Pablo Sandoval earlier in the year. He's still been out. Expect Markakis to be out for a while. Might open up playing time for Xavier Avery to get called back up. Andy Chavez has been taking over for Markakis in the meantime, who was activated from the DL this week. Another injury, Jose Contreras may miss the rest of the season. Could mean Tommy John. Could also mean the end of his career at his age. And Andrelton Simmons, future superstar shortstop, I hope, called up by the Braves. Tyler Pastrnicki sent down. This guy's a plus defender, hit .300 in the minors. If he can give the Braves those kind of numbers with good defense, that'll be an upgrade over Pastrnicki. And speaking of guys hoping to get called up soon, it might be a few years, though. The Major League Baseball draft was this evening. Carlos Correa goes number one to the Houston Astros in a bit of a surprise. The shortstop out of the Puerto Rico Baseball Academy, while Mark Appel from Stanford, projected top three, maybe even number one pick, the pitcher out of Stanford, falls all the way to number 8 to the Pittsburgh Pirates. KP, I'm going to hit you with the draft questions, because these are two NL Central teams. Which team do you think made out better, the Astros at number 1 or the Pirates at number 8?
From all I've read about Carlos Correa and Mark Appel, I think Pittsburgh came out ahead there. Mark Appel's been performing better as of late. Correa's kind of like a, we've got to develop him. He's not going to be a Bryce Harper phenom. He's not going to come up to the majors anytime in the next year or two. So, I mean, Correa's, they're definitely trying to sway him. He's signed to go to the U of Miami, but they've offered him a $7.2 million signing bonus, which sounds pretty nice. And but they've, a lot of the scouts think he might be a little slower. He doesn't have like a big stolen base potential. He doesn't quite hit the ball out of the park. He's kind of got a lot of warning track power, so he's definitely got room to develop. I mean, he's 17 years old. He's got time, so it's not an issue there. But Mark Appel, he's a junior right now at Stanford. He's 10-1, 2.27 ERA. The batters are batting .210 against him. He's got five complete games. I mean, he's ready to at least bump up to Double A, I'd imagine, and I mean, get his way up to help that Pittsburgh starting lineup.
The way Pittsburgh has drafted recently, each of their top picks have been pitchers. Now each of the past 3 years, taking Appel this year, Jameson Taillon back in 2010 with the number 2 pick, and Gerrit Cole out of UCLA with the number 1 pick last year. Yeah, I would start buying Pittsburgh Pirates stock if these pitchers all pan out. They're going to be much more valuable than the Facebook stock I bought a couple weeks ago.
Oops.
Going to move it over to 3 Up, 3 Down fantasy for this week, where we gave you Wade Miley. He was great last week. We gave you R.A. Dickey, who has gone from 60% to 80% owned, eight and a third shutout innings or something this week. The 3 Up players, the Mapes Fantasy Specials, you can find on our 3u3d.mlblogs.com blog, have been killing it. I'm just going to just toot our own horn here for a second. We're killing it. Start paying attention to us. So 3 Up this week, a guy we maybe should have had 3 Up last week when he returned off the disabled list, but we wanted to see how it played out. It's played out well so far. Jeremy, who is your 3 Up player for this week?
That would be big Carlos Quentin in San Diego. He's, you know, finally came off the DL, like you mentioned, after missing the whole beginning of the season. And this is a guy that, you know, they signed in the offseason expecting huge things out of. And even though he's only been back for a few games, not even a week's worth yet, but he is absolutely raking. He's totally earning the money. He, so far, 9-for-19, 3 homers and 7 RBIs, which honestly might be better than the rest of the Padres lineup combined so far this year. So, you know, they really need him to keep hitting, and they're not going to contend this year, let's be real. But, you know, if they can stock some talent around him in a couple of years while he's still under contract, you never know. He might make another run like they did a few times in the last 5 years or so.
Carlos Quentin owned in just 57% of Yahoo leagues right now. You get a little wary because of Petco Park for hitters, but Quentin has great power to left field, where that marine shelf that Anthony Bass told us about 5 episodes ago, that it does not get as affected, the power to left field, as to the other parts of the ballpark. Speaking of Anthony Bass, his buddy, Angelo Felicia, who is your 3 Up player this week?
Hey, nice segue. It didn't get stolen from you.
Yes.
My 3 Up player is Gordon Beckham from the White Sox. This past week, had a pretty solid week. He's gone 9-for-29, had 3 home runs, and he's betting .310. And the White Sox are hot right now, too, so that helps. So I would definitely say Gordon Beckham right now for my AL Central division.
All right, sounds good. And the last 3 Up player this week, Brian, we usually let you praise the Rangers or bash somebody in your division. This week, I'm going to make you praise somebody in your division that's not a Ranger. Who is your 3 Up player?
Well, thanks, Mapes. I didn't want to have to lie by praising a Ranger right now. But my 3 Up player is Jason Vargas, pitcher for the Mariners. He's got a 1.05 whip, which is to say incredible. Especially, well, pitching for the Mariners, he's got a good park to pitch in, but he's pitching like a beast on the road with a 1.12 whip. He's got a lot of good hitter parks to pitch in, but He's been a beast this year, so I definitely say go pick him up.
You know who else might be a good three-up player from your division, Brian? Jared Parker.
Yeah. Yeah, go pick him up too.
Yeah, as I'm alluding to that, we're recording the podcast on Monday night. It's about midnight. Jared Parker now has a no-hitter through 7 innings on Brian's Rangers. Parker, not bad. 2.88 ERA coming into this game. You don't like his K-to-walk ratio, but if he's home in that spacious Oakland Stadium, Jared Parker's not a bad stream starter as well. Gonna move it. Look, we gave you bonus 4 up this week. Gonna go over to the 3 down segment and start it off with a pitcher that has, some people had a great 2011, had some expectations coming into this season, but hasn't done as well. KP, who is your 3 down player for this week?
I am going to stick with Jaime Garcia, who, I mean, in the NL Central, the quote-unquote weak NL Central, Jaime Garcia has only gone 3-3 this year. He's got a 3.78 ERA. I mean, it's nothing to call home about. He's only got 49 Ks. It's definitely should be, obviously, it should be lower. I mean, he's got the Cubs, the Pirates, the surging Pirates, I should say, and the Astros to kind of beat up on. I guess I should mention the Brewers because we aren't playing that well either. But, yeah, he should definitely at least have 5 wins already, especially with the offense he's got behind him.
All right. Jaime Garcia is owned in 71% of fantasy leagues, I believe. Let me see if I can find that correctly. Yeah, here are a few guys, a few starting pitchers I would rather have than Jaime Garcia for the rest of the year. I'd rather have Ryan Vogelsong, 65% owned. I'd rather have Edwin Jackson, 59% owned. I'd rather have the returning Vance Worley, 55% owned. I would rather have Mark Burley, 51% owned, right on the line of the Mapes Fantasy Special, especially if Burley is pitching at home. Those are guys I would rather, actually, you know what? I'd rather also have Eric Bedard at least get the strikeouts out of it. If I'm going to have an ERA and whip like that, I'd rather have the strikeouts from Eric Bedard 40% owned than not getting them out of Jaime Garcia. Going to go to another pitcher that is 3 down, Jeremy Dorn, double dipping, a guy that used to be on your favorite team.
Yeah, and he used to pitch a lot better when he was on my favorite team. Hiroki Kuroda was one of those under-the-radar gets of the Yankees this offseason that I personally thought would make a huge difference for their pitching staff. And, of course, along with Michael Pineda, the trade with the Mariners, and he went down with an injury. And Kuroda's just – he's not playing up to expectations. His numbers aren't awful. I mean, his ERA is a little high. It's 3.82. He's 4-6, and his whip's 1.35. So, obviously, not great numbers by any means. But – this is a guy that, you know, in his past, he's held about a 3-4, 3-3 ERA and good for 14, 15 wins a year. He was always a pretty consistent number two guy in LA. And I think that's what the Yankees wanted out of him, behind CeCe. And he's just really, he's not pitching up to par at all. He's allowed 70 hits in 68 innings. He's, allowed 11 homers already. He's just, you know, he's just getting knocked around. His opponents are batting almost 270 against him. So, if he's going to want to, you know, if the Yankees are going to get what they expect out of him, they've got to retool something because it's just not going as planned. And I know that he's admitted to being kind of a guy that lets mental situations take over his game a little bit. So I'm sure pitching under the bright lights in New York hasn't helped things at all, but he's got to turn it around quick or the Yankees are in a little bit of trouble in the pitching staff once again.
All right, and the last 3 down player out of my division, the National League East, I am downgrading Jimmy Rollins for the rest of the year. If you can trade him based on his name alone, I would try and do it. I'm worried about what happens still when Utley and Howard come back if they're completely healthy. Except for Carlos Ruiz, there's nobody there to drive Jimmy Rollins in. He's even not even getting on base as much. He's hitting just .237. On the season, 2 home runs, does have 10 stolen bases, which are nice. Glad to see he's still running. But these are luminary shortstops that are currently ahead of Jimmy Rollins on the Yahoo rankings for the 2012 season. Marco Scudero, Alcides Escobar, Jed Lowry, Ian Desmond, Kyle Seager. These are not well-known names. Jimmy Rollins, if I can deal him for help somewhere else and take a lesser shortstop and get another one off waivers, I would go that route if possible. That'll do it for 3 Up, 3 Down this week. We're going to do a special segment right now before we get to the matchups to watch. I released my 2 early Major League Baseball awards this week on our blog, 3u3d.mlblogs.com. While I'm here, thank you for clicking, reading. We were the 27th ranked Major League Baseball fan blog for the month of May with over 4,000 views. We're hoping to get into the top 25. KP has promised us t-shirts if we do. If you would like me to finally own a t-shirt and not record this podcast without one, please click the blog and read it. I appreciate it. But getting back, I wrote the MLB, two early MLB awards. This is what I think the award should be handed out at this point of the season, up to now. Seeing if these guys disagree with me a little, I had a couple controversial picks, I think. We're going to start it off with KP, the man who promised me a t-shirt if I can, if we can get us in the top 25. KP, where do you think I messed up on my Major League Baseball awards?
Now, I may be playing a little bit of a homer, but I do think Ryan Braun deserved at least a bronze, or the third, or whatever you want to call it, the bronze position in the NL MVP race. I mean, if you want to go comparisons-wise, his OPS last year in the MVP season was 994. His current OPS is 993. Yes, slightly lower. His slugging this year has been higher. He's batting, or his OPS with runners in scoring position, or no, yeah, his OPS with runners in scoring position is 941, which is quite high. And the only thing that I can understand, which a lot of people, I mean, is a big aspect, I think, to MVPs in the whole, is his average is 24 points lower, which is definitely a downfall for him. But I mean, he's definitely playing up to the same caliber as he was last year. I mean, he's got 14 home runs this year. I just don't know how you can keep him out.
It was tough. There was a case for the National League MVP where there's a case of about 6-7 guys that you can all make a case to be in the top 3. I went Votto 1, Carlos Ruiz 2, and Melky Cabrera 3. I will say I still had David Wright and Carlos Gonzalez ahead of Ryan Braun. Braun has been great. He is 6th in wins above replacement right now, but looking at it cumulatively, I can't even say that word.
What was that?
Cumulatively. There we go. I think Cabrera leading the National League in hitting, leading the National League in hits, what he's done for the Giants, scoring runs at the top of that lineup has exceeded what Ryan Braun has done so far. Do I expect Ryan Braun to be there in the end, probably top 3? Yes, but 2 months into the season, Melky Cabrera has done more for his team that is in second place than Ryan Braun has done for his team, which is not in second place in the National League Central. Go over to Angelo. What would you like to pick a bone a bit about on my MLB awards so far this season?
I would just say probably the Chris Sale getting a bronze for American League Cy Young. I mean, you even say in an article that, you know, is he a reliever or a starter? And we've had this discussion a couple times before. And although I do think he's good, I also think that Jared Weaver deserves to be up there, especially after throwing a no-hitter this year already. And he's just been solid So I know the injury right now, maybe that's the reason why he took him off. The injury right now doesn't help his cause. But the only other thing I have to say is, and I know it's still based off of what Major League Baseball would do, but I'm just against, like, people like Yu Darvish winning Rookie of the Year when the dude's played baseball for, like, 7 years in Japan professionally. But I know how the award is given out, so I get it.
No, I completely agree on the Darvish point. I don't think Japanese players that have played at least 5 years should be eligible for Rookie of the Year when they come to the majors, but I have to play by the rules, and Darvish gets first place for now. Sale versus Weaver. Sale has a better ERA. Sale has more wins. Weaver does have a better whip, but the minor, it's very close in that. Sale has better hits per nine, and is just and is now ahead of Weaver in strikeouts. So every seemingly major statistical category, Sale is ahead of. When I sat down to write the awards, I didn't think Chris Sale was going to be my third place pitcher, and then once I dug into the numbers, Sale earned that spot for right now. He seems to be getting better and better as he's getting more used to the starting pitcher role. Brian, over to you. I know you're happy I gave two awards to Rangers, but what would you like to pick a bone with me about the MLB awards?
Well, those two awards, I obviously can't argue with you, because I do think Yu Darvish will be the American League MVP. Because I know he's been a professional for a few years, but he still is only 25 years old, so he's not old. But the thing I have wrong is Carlos Ruiz is not the gold medal winner for National League MVP. You have a Joey Votto, great player, has earned his contract, but Ruiz is handling the pitching staff of the Phillies, and he is their only legitimate offensive weapon that they've got going on. So I still don't understand how Ruiz is not your number one.
That was an interesting call there. I thought Joey Votto was the clear number one so far in the National League, with Kemp on the disabled list having his problems. Votto leads the league in on-base percentage, leads the league in OPS. He's provided gold glove first base for Cincinnati and is in first place right now. And when I think valuable, I think Votto has been more valuable to a first place team than Carlos Ruiz has to a fourth place team right now. But Carlos Ruiz has been absolutely fantastic. I actually thought people were going to yell at me for putting Carlos Ruiz too high. I'm glad you thought I put Carlos Ruiz too low. Help Chooch start the All-Star game. I'm a Braves fan, and I'm saying that Carlos Ruiz should be the National League starting catcher. Going to the last one, Jeremy, I know you and me, we bicker back and forth a lot. What would you like to pick a bone about me about for my Major League Baseball awards at this point in the season?
Well, I'm going to go straight to the one that you started the description saying this will be a controversial pick, I'm sure. That's Aroldis Chapman being the silver medalist for your NL Cy Young, and not because he's not incredible, not because closers are unimportant. They're, you know, tremendously important, having a good one at the back of the pen, but it's just so rare for a closer to win Cy Young, and I think with the quality of pitching in the National League this year, I mean, you listed almost everyone I thought of on your just off the podium underneath that section of, you know, I think about half of them, if not more, are better suited to be in the top three right now than Chapman. I mean, obviously Chapman's numbers are incredible, but for example, Ryan Cook, one of the other players you listed in the AL for Rookie of the Year, I mean, he's given up one run in, what, 30 innings or so, but you would never consider him for Cy Young because he's not a closer. So I think that stigma, which of course it is a more important position in the bullpen, but I don't think that Chapman, you know, as of right now, is more valuable to his team than, I don't know, Kane to the Giants, Dickey to the Mets. I mean, where would they be without R.A. Dickey right now? McDonald to the Pirates, even Cole Hamels to the Phillies with Halliday's struggles. So that's my bone to pick. And, you know, it was a bold choice. I like it a lot, but I don't see him even being top five by the end of the season.
It's definitely, you don't see relievers win Cy Youngs very often. I believe the last was Eric Gagne for the Dodgers, but, I mean, there's so much starting pitching depth that they kind of all meld together. Beachy's been great. McDonald's been great. Gonzalez and Strasburg. Those are your top four in ERA. Johan Santana has a 2.38 ERA. Ari Dickey is 8-1. Lance Lynn's 8-2. These are all guys with sub-3 ERAs, and I think looking at all of those guys except Gio Gonzalez, who I had first, and I thought about this, who could I put number two, and they all kind of just melded together, and then you just look at Aroldis Chapman. And I said in the column, he's pitched 28 innings without giving up a run. And he has 50 strikeouts in 28 innings. Ryan Cook has been great too, but he doesn't have 50 strikeouts in 28 innings. He has pitched high leverage situations for the Cincinnati Reds. He's now moved into that closer role that Sean Marshall failed. And when you don't think, you think that the starters are worth more, win probability added is a key statistic for me. And Aroldis Chapman leads the National League in that statistic right now. He's added 2 wins because he is shutting down teams in big situations. And that's why I have him in the silver medal right now. I'm sure he's going to eventually give up a run, probably fall apart a little bit and fall off. But at this point in the season, the way it is, this is the awards are up to this point. I couldn't see not having Chapman in that spot. And I even thought about putting him in the gold medal position. But Gio Gonzalez just has done enough to stay number one for now. That was Mapes gets yelled at by everybody else. I hope I defended myself well. We're going to move over to matchups to watch now. It is the second round of interleague play this weekend, and we're going to start it off with a fun interleague matchup, possibly a World Series matchup, if both of these teams could get into the playoffs, a rematch of the 2010 World Series, right? I'm trying to think of that. 2010 World Series rematch. Brian, what is your AL West matchup to watch?
Well, it's an AL and an NL West matchup. It's the Rangers versus the Giants going on this Friday, Saturday, and Sunday from the friendly confines of AT&T Park in San Francisco. Friday will be Matt Harrison versus Barry Zito. Hopefully we see the old, or as me, I hope I see the old Matt Harrison versus the old Barry Zito. But it's probably not going to happen. Saturday, we got Scott Feldman going versus Ryan Vogelsong, who is, I actually had not really hardly ever heard of him. I had to look him up. He's got a 2.38 ERA on the season with a whip of 1.22. Been a pretty solid starter for the Giants so far this season. But and then on Sunday, we got the Dutch oven, Derek Holland, going off against 2-time NL Cy Young winner Tim Lincecum. Both have struggled this year, so that could be a fun game to watch depending on how you look at baseball, whether you like home runs or bad pitching. Could be kind of fun.
All right, and we're going to keep it in the AL. Angelo, what is your AL Central matchup to watch this week?
Oh, mine's going to be the Blue Jays taking on the White Sox this week, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. Decent pitching matchups, I guess. The Jays do throw Romero and White Sox do throw Peavy, but not against each other. Maybe should be pretty good offensive stats, too, with Joey Bats and Adam Dunn all week. So big implications, too. You got the Jays are 3 games back out of the division, and the White Sox are trying to fight off the Indians for first place in the Central.
Definitely should be a fun one. Paul Konerko has been absolutely on fire so far this season for the White Sox. He should also be starting the All-Star game now that I'm in the mode of getting people votes for the All-Star game. I haven't even filled out my ballot, but I'm sure Konerko will be getting my AL first baseman vote, which you probably wouldn't have believed at the start of the season with Prince Fielder Pujols going over to that league. Gonna stick to the AL, rounded out my AL East matchup to watch this week. The battle for Florida. The Tampa Bay Rays against the Miami Marlins in Miami should be a good one. down at Marlins Park, their first matchup there this week. Marlins have been on fire, steadily climbing up in a tie for first place in the AL Central coming into tonight's games, actually. The matchups for that will be Jeremy Hellickson, the defending AL Rookie of the Year, against Ricky Nolasco on Friday. On Saturday will be Matt Moore against Carlos Zambrano. And the last matchup on Sunday is James Shields against Anibal Sanchez. One of my favorite statistics so far this season, Anibal Sanchez leads the majors in quality starts, so he's been a productive pitcher for the Miami Marlins against big game James Shields. Should be a good one on Sunday at Marlins Park. Gonna go over to the National League now, and KP, a couple weeks ago you were disgusted that this was your central matchup to watch. Now it actually could be a battle for first place. What is your NL Central matchup to watch this week?
I've got Pittsburgh at Cincinnati. If Pittsburgh sweeps the series, which I don't want to say is unlikely, but it's probably unlikely, they will take a tie for the NL Central lead, which probably hasn't happened to Pittsburgh since the last season, and then they immediately collapsed and fell into oblivion. But in the first game, it's A.J. Burnett versus Homer Bailey, which is definitely a good matchup to watch. They've both been pitching really well this season. Burnett's obviously a big name, came to Pittsburgh this season, and aside from one bad start, he's had an ERA that's around 1.5. The second one is Lincoln versus Cueto. Cueto's been shaky lately. I've always been a big Cueto fan, even though he plays for the Reds. I think he's got some nasty stuff. He strikes out a lot of guys, but he does have a tendency to give up a lot of runs, and I mean every other start or so, every three starts or so. And last one is Correa versus Leak. So I think it'll be a good series. Pittsburgh's coming off of their first series win in Milwaukee since who knows when. I don't know. They've won like two series in the last 12 years. And they're 7-3 in the last 10, and Cincinnati 6-4. So it'll be a early battle for the NL Central lead and early bragging rights.
All right, going to bring it over to the National League East for my matchup to watch this week. And it is between the Washington Nationals and the New York Metropolitans. The Metropolitans still off that high from Johan Santana's no-hitter on Friday night, just a half game out of first place behind the Nationals, who are tied with the Marlins. All five teams in the National League East separated by just four games. Should be a good one at Nationals Park. What's up with all the East teams? It's Marlins Park, Nationals Park. Can't these teams get some sponsors in? Tomorrow's game will be Jordan Zimmermann taking on the returning Chris Young, not the Diamondbacks outfielder, the former Padres pitcher. He'll be returning to get Johan Santana an extra day of rest after throwing 130 pitches in his no-hitter. Wednesday's game will be Jeremy Hefner taking on Edwin Jackson. And Thursday, R.A. Dickey, last week's 3-up player, 8-1 on the year, 2.69 ERA. Has mastered that knuckleball. He will be taking on Chin Ming Wong, 1-1 on the year with a 6.43 ERA. If Wong doesn't get the job done, we might be seeing Ross Detweiler back in that national rotation. Jeremy, last and least, like always, what is your National League West matchup to watch?
That would be my Dodgers versus the Philadelphia Phillies, which has actually already started. The game, first game of the series was once again, but they barely pulled it out. Middle infield combo, Herrera and Gordon put together a little mini rally on top of the ninth against Papelbon. The Dodgers won the first game, which, you know, the way we're playing now without Kemp and without Mark Ellis and just not putting anything together, any win is huge, so we'll take it. You know, it's a huge matchup for both teams, though. You know, as you alluded to, all the teams in the East are just clustered there, all over 500, all just, you know, playing out of their minds, and it's such a close division from first to last that the Phillies, conceivably, if they had swept the Dodgers, depending on how the rest of the teams played in the East, they could have been, you know, even tied for first, probably at least close to it. And that's pretty crazy considering they're in last right now. But, you know, anyway, the Dodgers have been fading, I hate to say, but as soon as Kemp went down the second time, we've just been struggling terribly. And so we need to continue to win, especially with the Giants playing well. We're only three games up now after having that huge lead early on. So yeah, tomorrow night is going to be Chad Billingsley versus Cliff Lee, which could spell trouble for myself and other Dodgers fans, considering how terribly Billingsley's been pitching lately. Then we'll go Wednesday. We got Chris Capuano and Kyle Kendrick. Kendrick had a great start recently. Capuano's been good all season. That'll be an interesting matchup that maybe a lot of people wouldn't have pegged as a good one at the beginning of the year, but I'm looking forward to. And then the last day, the Thursday day game, is going to be Aaron Harang versus Cole Hamels. Another potentially disastrous game for myself and Dodger Nation here, but Harang does have his moments. He's been basically good, then bad, then good, then bad, so you never know, and it's just a shame that he has to try and take on one of the better pitchers in all of baseball this year in Cole Hamels.
All right, that's going to do it for matchups to watch. I hope everybody enjoys their interleague play weekend. Let's see, what are the two teams that don't get to play interleague? It is the Padres and the Brewers. KP, don't enjoy interleague play this weekend.
We have the Padres as Angela's coming to visit.
Ooh.
Yes, sir.
That'll be fun. This will get you excited too, KP. Padres are 5-19 on the road this season.
That's exciting. I mean, the Pirates were 4-38 or whatever in their last 50 some trips to Miller Park, and they beat us in the series. So
yeah,
I don't know.
KP doesn't know it yet, but he has to be a Padres fan this weekend.
Only on Sunday.
Oh, Bass versus Gallardo.
Yeah, only on Sunday. Oh, I have a Gallardo jersey.
I was going to say, that's going to be awkward. That's going to be awkward. I knew you had a Gallardo jersey. All right, well, you two have fun at the ballpark. Tell Anthony Bass, all of us at the 3U3D family, say hi. That's going to do it for us this week. Make sure, everybody, you follow us on Twitter. It's at 3U3D over there. 3UP, 3DOWN on Facebook if you would like us. We appreciate it. 3U3D.mlblogs.com is the blog. Over 4,000 views, as I said before. The 27th ranked fan blog on MLB.com. We are very honored to be considered that high. Hope everybody is enjoying what we put up over there. 3U3DBaseball@gmail.com if you'd like to drop us a line. Love us, hate us, suggestions for us, whatever you want to say. And that's going to do it for my fellow roundtable players, Brian Boynton, Jeremy Dorn, Angela Felicia, Kurt Peter. I am Brian Mapes. We ran out of time. We will get to Eddie Mata the next time.